To Psalm 29 in the Bible, 504 is the page, and we will read it and use it responsibly. The voice of God in the great storm, a psalm of David. Ascribe to the Lord, O heavenly beings. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength.
Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Worship the Lord in the holy splendor.
The voice of the Lord is over the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord over mighty waters.
The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty.
The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon.
He makes Lebanon skip like a calf, and Syria like a wild ox.
The voice of the Lord flashes forth flames of fire.
The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh.
The voice of the Lord causes the oaks to whirl and strips the forest bare, and in his temple all say, Glory.
The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord sits enthroned as King forever.
May the Lord give strength to his people. May the Lord bless his people with peace. Second scripture is Isaiah 6, verses 1 to 8. A vision of God in the temple. In the year that God Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lofty, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Seraphs were in attendance above him. Each had six wings. With two, they covered their faces, and with two, they covered their feet. And with two they flew. And one called to another and said, Holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. The pivots on the threshold shook at the voices of those who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, Woe is me, I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. Yet my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphs flew to me, holding a live coal that had been taken from the altar with a pair of tongs. The seraph touched my mouth with it and said, Now that this has touched your lips, your guilt has been departed. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And I said, Here am I. Send me.
Thanks very much, Aaron. Life-defining moments. If you think about your life, have you experienced a life-defying moment? An experience that you encountered that was life-altering. At the conclusion of our service that we enjoyed at Harrington Pond a few weeks ago, the end of August, we had an opportunity to sit around in a circle and share lunch together and just chat. And for me, it was a very meaningful moment because in the course of the conversation, we ended up segueing into Bob and I sharing about our experience of being in a potential airplane crash across the ocean in Northern Ireland as we were preparing to land in Belfast. And we shared some of the many experiences that that occasion brought to us. And I remember leaving that time of fellowship together and realizing how life-altering that experience was for me. It was an indeed experience of being absolutely faithful. not knowing if we would survive. And we did. And so I knew that for me that was a life-altering experience. But what about you? As you think about that question, as you search through your memory, is there something that comes to mind of an experience that was out of the ordinary and that changed your life, changed the course of your life? And very often these life-altering experiences change how we see the world. We look at the world differently after we've come through these experiences. As we think about these defining, life-changing moments, we can find some common elements in them. Firstly, often in those life-changing moments is an experience of the holy. There's an encounter with the divine, the sacred, and I think this is how the prophet Isaiah was on this particular day. The situation that had precipitated Isaiah's life changing was an encounter with the death of King Uzziah. Now, I think many of you are probably old enough to remember the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Do you recall the days of darkness that seemed to cover the United States and even Canada following that assassination? Or what about 9/11? Do you remember where you were, what you were doing when you first heard the news that the planes had hit the Trade Towers? World Trade Towers in New York City? Or what about Princess Diana's death? I can still remember coming down to breakfast Sunday morning and hearing the news that she had died the night before. The young man Isaiah had no doubt a similar experience when we heard about the death of King Uzziah. The death of the king led to Isaiah going to the temple. And the inclination to go to church when a crisis shakes the foundation of our lives is as old as religion itself. There in the temple, Isaiah encountered the holy. He witnessed God's Spirit hovering over the Ark of the Covenant. And it was a life-changing moment, a life-altering moment for Isaiah. Indeed, it was a vision that profoundly affected his people. I don't know about you, but many of us do a lot of ordinary living as we address our lives on a daily basis. We may be aware, but often we're not totally aware of God's working in our lives. And then something happens that causes us to experience God's presence in a very direct way. Loss of a job, sudden illness, a near-death experience, the birth of a child. And all of a sudden, we're face-to-face with God for the first time ever, perhaps, or at least in a new and different way. And God's presence breaks through the ordinariness of our lives. This happened to some extent this week for me as I was driving with Linda on our way to Appen Presbyterian Church to do a Change Your World presentation that evening. We left Stratford at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and I headed down to the 401 highway to make my way to the west of London. And all of a sudden, it hit. Torrential rain. And it was bad. I don't know if any of you were out on the roads on Tuesday afternoon, but it was a very severe storm. And as I made my way onto the 401 highway, everybody was driving slowly. In fact, many had their double flashers on because I had my windshield wipers at full speed, and you still could not see hardly a foot in front of you. There was thunder, there was lightning, and the rain came down. And I have done a lot of driving in my life. Bob knows this. And there was a moment when I actually thought, I don't know if I can do this. It was that strong. And I know that these storms can be extremely strong and then all of a sudden disappear. And so I thought, okay, I can do it. I can just do 1 minute at a time. As long as I can still see the rear lights of the car in front of me, I will inch my way along this 401 highway. And it didn't let up. It kept going and going. And I heard the voice of God through my friend Linda. And she said, a very short sentence to me. She said, Carol, you can do this. And I heard God speak. He said, Carol, you can do this. And we were late. We were about an hour late because it had been such a difficult drive. But we made it. And the drive home was sweet. Oh, it was sweet. It was so easy. We didn't have any rain, and I was so grateful. And so sometimes God speaks to us, and he tries to tell us things. I pondered that experience for a little while after I got home that night, thinking about how life-altering that experience was, realizing in the midst of a very, very severe storm that we were all safe, and everybody on that 401 highway was safe as we kept going. Life-changing moments bring us face-to-face with God very, very often. And believe me, although Linda couldn't hear it, I was praying pretty hard every minute. Secondly, life-altering moments can make us feel very humble. When Isaiah realized he was in the presence of God, what did he say? Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. When we are in the presence of God, the depths of our shortcomings can really haunt us. I know this has probably never happened to any of us here, but it's sort of the feeling we get when we're driving at 130 kilometers on the 401 highway on a sunny day, and all of a sudden, blue and red lights start to come behind you. And there is that feeling of, oh no! And you immediately slow down to 100, and you are humbled in the recognition of your guilt in the presence of authority. And I wonder what Isaiah felt as he confessed to God. He was humbled in that moment. And humility is part and parcel of our encounters with God. I wasn't sure whether I should share this rather humorous story at this point, but I thought, oh well, Harrington are good. They're good to go. So here it goes. At a reception honoring musician Sir Robert Mayer on his 100th birthday, elderly British socialite Lady Diana Cooper fell into conversation with a friendly woman who seemed to know her well. Lady Diana's failing eyesight prevented her from recognizing her fellow guest until she peered more closely at the magnificent diamonds, and she realized she was talking to Queen Elizabeth. Overcome with embarrassment, Lady Diana curtsied and stammered, Ma'am, I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't recognize you without your crown. It was so much Sir Robert's evening, the Queen replied, that I decided to leave it behind. Humility. Although most of us will never be in the presence of Queen Elizabeth, each of us have the joy and honor of being in God's presence each and every day. So life-altering moments, life-defining moments, bring us close and into the presence of God often. It humbles us, and sometimes it moves us towards a call to serve, a call of service that we've not encountered before. God calls us to serve, and it's not dictated by our worthiness. God's call often comes to the most unlikely candidates. Cursing fishermen, cheating tax collectors, former prostitutes were some of the people called as Jesus walked the way to Nazareth. People are not called into service of God because they are the best looking, most talented, or greatest in human standards. People hear the call when they are going about their everyday affairs. And for Isaiah, a routine visit to the temple turned into a life-altering, life-changing moment in which he replied, "Here I am, send me." There stands in the old country of Czechoslovakia a famous altar showing Christ without arms to remind all who worship there that they are the arms of Christ to the world. The Christian church must be reminded that Christians are not just to pray, but to also say, "Here I am. What do you want me to do?" What is needed in the church today are disciples who will say, "Here I am. I will follow Jesus and learn as much as I can about being a Christian disciple. Here I am. I will find some way of ministering to the needs in my community. Here I am. I will teach Sunday school. Here I am. I will work on a committee within the church. Here I am. I will invite my friend to come with me to church. Here I am. I will do whatever needs to be done around the church building or grounds. Here I am. I will give myself to Christ's service and begin whatever is necessary to fulfill that call." We have all heard it said, "Well, you've made a believer of me." I remember the first time that the Swiffer ads came into the limelight on the television. I was not convinced that a Swiffer could actually dust and clean the way the advertisement showed. However, when I purchased my first Swiffer and saw how amazing and how easy it was to work with, whenever I saw those ads on TV, I cry out, "Well, you've made a believer out of me, Swiffer." And to this day, Swiffers are still in my house. Jesus wants to make believers out of you and I. Are you ready? Are we ready to have a life-changing encounter with the Lord this week as we worship and respond, "Here I am. Send me. Use me. Guide me. Direct me this week, Lord. Here I am."